welcome to another episode of Grounded, everybody. I forget what episode number this is already, but I'm terribly excited for this. Before we introduce our guests, Piper, how are you doing today?
I'm good. We survived the holidays. Is this our first post-holiday podcast?
It is. I think so. And I feel like so much has happened in the last, you know, few weeks or so. I was in California this whole week. Piper, I feel like we missed out on the biggest podcast opportunity ever because I was with Todd, Kat, and Amy, so the whole producer team.
Oh my gosh.
Without you. So, next year, 2026 IPSA, and for those who don't know, that's Independent Professional Seeds Association. We will be doing a live podcast recording next year, I think. We got to make sure you come.
Yeah, I'm getting the invite next year. I love it. I'm holding you to it.
Definitely. All right. Well, today, I'm super, super excited for this episode. We have Ben Veras from Qatari. So Qatari is a project developer in kind of the grassland carbon credit space. So without further ado, I would just like to introduce Ben. Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Of course. Thanks for being here. You know, I already, you know, because I've been following you and have been connected with you on LinkedIn for a while. So I see some of your exciting posts, and you honestly make me feel like, I really haven't done much with my life, because you have climbed Mount Everest. You have gotten the Live Your Dream Award by North Face for climbing some other mountain in the Himalayas. You're a Forbes 30 Under 30 recipient. You're the CEO of Qatari. I mean, what aren't you doing out there?
Yeah, just you got to find that 25th hour of the day, and if you keep working as hard as the ranchers are working out there, a few things can happen over time. But I've been very fortunate to live out a few of my dreams, and I like to say I'm retired from the mountaineering and back in the office for at least a little while longer. We'll see if I make it back out there.
That's awesome. Well, could you tell us a little bit about where you come from as far as your work experience and what led you to Qatari? Because we've met one time in person, and the one thing I know that you really love is math, but yes. Now, you run a project developing company. So it's how did you connect those two dots?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's a little bit of a winding path, but I think there's some strong themes throughout that. And really on my end, as you mentioned, I came out of school with a love of math. And when I tell most people that, the number one thing they can think of is, well, are you a math teacher? That's usually what my Uber drivers ask, is the number one profession of math majors, I guess. But for me, I started my career at a company called McKinsey & Company, which does a lot of consulting for the Fortune 500 companies. And really the focus for me was what I called the tangible industries. I think there's a lot of people working on lots of fancy softwares and lots of things, and that's great. But for me, I think we still need roads and bridges and steel and all these other things, and cars and planes. And so for me, I worked for a lot of automotive companies. I worked in aerospace and defense, mining, construction, ag. So worked for companies like Caterpillar, Fiat, Boeing, et cetera. And so really having the experience of working on that hardware side of things, and again, really those tangible industries that we see all around us every day, I think just being able to see something and hold it in your hands really adds a lot of value for me. And from there, I was fortunate to work at a few different technology companies that were in the hardware space. And that's what led me to my first really deep dive in the ag space. And I worked for a company called Vents. So Vents developed a virtual fencing technology. They were kind of the first to really do so at scale, and were the only product in the U.S. There's a few other competitors now, but was very fortunate to join Vents at a really exciting time when the hardware was finished and we started to commercialize and really scale out into the ranching communities. And I just saw really the huge potential of virtual fencing, both for livestock management, for understanding where your livestock are, how they're grazing, but also all the secondary benefits like reducing cross fencing, which enables better wildlife corridors, all these other things really started to stack up. And that was a really exciting time for us. We were fortunate to grow quite quickly and were acquired by Merck Animal Health. So it is now a Merck company, and it still goes under the Vents name. But for me, that really presented an opportunity where I had a chance to step back and look at, where do I want to, continue to add value. And I just saw such potential of using things like virtual fencing to improve livestock management, and that resulted in improving the soil. And so we really kind of stumbled our way into the carbon markets while I was at Vents. And when Merck acquired them, I had a few months of sit downs with the Merck team and convinced them to let me go and spin off Qatari. So Qatari is a totally independent company. It's not related to Merck, but obviously, some of the founding ideas were built while we were at Vents a few years ago. And that's really just led us to where we are today. Just this real belief that technology and this upswing in the markets for carbon credits, all these things combined can really help ranchers achieve that next level. And I'm sure that's something we'll get into today.
Really quick, before we jump into, first of all, what a stacked list you just walked through. But before we jump into Qatari too much, can you just walk us through the premise of virtual fencing? I'm sure there's somebody listening in who doesn't know what that is.
Yeah, for sure. So virtual fencing, at the simplest level, if you think about a dog collar, it's very similar. You put a collar or a device on the animal. It tends to be cows, but they are expanding to some other livestock like sheep in the future. And it basically uses a combination of audio and shock stimulus to keep the animal contained in a specific area. And instead of a dog collar uses a wire that's buried beneath your yard. So it's a fixed location. The benefit of virtual fencing in this new technology is it uses the GPS coordinates of the animal and allows you to create an infinite variation of fences. And it's remarkable that the voltage is the same as a hot wire. So it has the same impact in terms of keeping the cow in a specific area. And that just allows you to manage them in a way that just wouldn't be possible. I mean, just the pure cost of fencing, a lot of places, $15,000, $20,000 a mile. Got a lot of places like Washington, Eastern Oregon, and Wyoming this year that have had huge fires. And when those fences burn down, a lot of ranchers got to build $1 million worth of fence again. And it just takes a lot of time and effort, and cows get out and then they can't find their way back in. And so virtual fencing just really created a lot of opportunities, not to mention the fact that it just tracks where your animals are. And just knowing, at 10 p.m. at night that you're not going to have to wake up next morning and find your cows, in your neighbor's yard is can be a really sense of calm for a lot of ranchers.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if it also, tracks all the animal movement, because just that alone, being able to see where they may or may not be overgrazing in the current paddocks is that itself is, hugely valuable, but also being able to kind of manipulate those fence lines on the fly. I mean, that's pretty incredible. I've
absolutely
not pounded a lot of fences in my life, but I've pounded enough fence posts to know that I don't want to do it anymore.
You've
pounded meter corks, Gunnar, so that's a fence post kind of a
yeah, right? I think so.
And for us, that was, the ranchers definitely, seek the value out of having the virtual and the containment capability of the virtual fencing collars. But one of the big things is truly just knowing where the animals are and understanding their behaviors. I think, I can't say the exact number, but when you're at vents, you can see that they log in a number of times per day. And what they're doing is they're not changing their fences most of the time. Oftentimes they'll set a set of, paddocks and they'll leave it for a month. But the big thing is that they log in multiple times a day to see where their cows are. And it's just fascinating because a lot of our ranches are, 10,000 acre cow-calf properties. They don't know, sure, they know they're in a certain pasture, but that pasture might be 1,500 acres. And so to know really where the animals are and how they're using that pasture, are they just sitting at the same watering hole? Some, pregnant cows, as they're going to labor, will wander off from the herd and walk in a circle 5 miles wide, And so understanding that behavior can be really fascinating for ranchers because they've just never had that insight before. And so again, that was definitely, we noticed a lot of people logging rapidly, constantly throughout the day just to see the cow's location, which is a fun use case.
That's awesome. That sounds itself really, really interesting. But what we're really here to talk about today is Qatari. So could you tell us a little bit more about who Qatari is and tell us who Qatari is, please.
Yeah, really, Qatari is what we call a natural capital or sometimes a carbon developer. The reason we'll sometimes say natural capital is to emphasize that there's things beyond carbon, and we can get into the specifics of that later. But for us, really, our job is to be an end-to-end service provider for ranchers so that they can capture the value of that, whether it's carbon credits or other natural capital. It's really just to provide the services. At the simplest level, natural capital or carbon credits are another commodity, whether that's like gold or oil or your livestock. It's something you can produce and it's something you can sell to interested buyers. The unfortunate side is that it's not as simply as digging the gold out of the ground or pulling the oil out of the ground. There's a lot of aspects of measuring it and verifying it, getting it into the ground to begin with. It's like fertilizing anything else, and then finding the right buyers for all that. And those are just complicated processes. And we want ranchers to focus on ranching. And so really our job is to take care of the algorithms, the instructions, the insights of how to get that carbon into the ground, as well as figuring out how to measure that. And by partnering with groups like Earth Optics to measure that, and then also having the buyers and all the paperwork in place. I mean, the protocols are hundreds of pages, and it just doesn't really make sense for every single rancher to each study those hundreds of pages. Instead, it makes sense for one company to learn that and to provide that as a service to those ranchers.
Definitely. So you're essentially making it as easy as possible for ranchers to focus on ranching, but make money in other ways where, they have definitely deserved that money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of ranchers are capturing carbon and simply not being paid for it. They're just giving it away for free in a way today. And so again, giving them the tools so that they can capture more carbon and improve their properties. Ultimately, it's all linked, you know, improving your animal health, improving your forage, and improving your soil carbon are all correlated positively to each other. And so being able to have those pieces in place and giving them the tools to do so, whether that's more data, whether that's more insights, or whether it's just the finances to, you know, use virtual fencing or pay for more fences or more water. I mean, some ranches, they know exactly what they want to do. They just don't have the resources to do it. And so providing those resources is paid for in spades by the carbon. And so we're excited to give them that unlock.
Definitely. And you guys are, you know, helping to get those tools in the hands of ranchers too, right? And kind of facilitating the adoption of different practices, because my understanding is a lot of these carbon programs, you know, the importance of additionality is, you know, critical. And that oftentimes involves, you know, some sort of land management practice. Or how is Kateri kind of helping ranchers, you know, ranch in a better way?
For sure, yeah. So we really think about it in kind of three lenses and the types of support we provide. But in terms of the interventions or the improvements that the rancher can make, you touched on a really good point there briefly. Ranchers have to have additionality. We can only pay you for the carbon that you would not have otherwise captured. We can't pay you for carbon you already captured. And we can't pay you just because it rained a lot that year, right? Lots of people look great when it rains, but we have to pay you for the carbon that you add to the soil through those improvements. Those improvements are under a broad categorization by the carbon markets, or at least the ones that we deal with, called agricultural land enhancement. And again, that's a pretty broad category, and it can include livestock management, it can include reseeding, it can include prescribed burning in some situations. There's a lot of different types of interventions. Kateri focuses on livestock management. We think that is the most effective and scalable tool to address grasslands and rangelands. But we often will support these other things. We do a lot around water management, a lot around, you know, particular forage management, thinking about your native perennial grasses. Some ranchers we support with battling back invasive quantities of woodland biomass, for example. Obviously, a lot of ranchers are dealing with juniper and other things. So there's a number of areas where we support, but the core of the business is in livestock management. And the way that we support ranchers, as was mentioned briefly earlier, is threefold. We focus on data and insights, we focus on expert advice, and we focus on financial resources. So the data and insights is we take hundreds and in some cases thousands of soil samples on our properties. That gives a really, really rich picture of where is your property performing. You can look at it and you can say, okay, yeah, this has got some invasive annual weeds, versus this has some really healthy grama grasses or Idaho fescue. You can have an idea by looking above the ground, but nothing will replace understanding truly the health of your soil underneath than taking soil cores. And that's something that, again, we're partnering with Earth Optics. We can do that in an extremely large scale and provide really, really rich information. We also provide our ranchers with GPS tracking tags or virtual fencing, depending on what their needs are. And that allows us to understand the behavior and the movements of their animals, even within the pastures. And that can be really, really powerful insights. We work with a number of other technology providers, and we can get into that. But ultimately, we believe that data is going to help really good ranchers become great or perfect ranchers. It's really that next unlock of having that visibility that they just wouldn't otherwise have. The next area is expertise. A lot of our ranchers, some of our ranchers are already some of the best grazers in the world, and some of our other ranchers are more absentee and need all the help they can get. They're either new to ranching, they're taking over a family operation, and you know, their grandfather's doing it one way for 100 years and they want to kind of take a step back and get another set of eyes on it. And that's where in our program, we provide all of our ranchers with a one-on-one ranch advisor who comes up to their property every year. We work with a lot of folks like Matt Ricketts, Alejandro Carrillo, Kirk Gadzia. We have this really great resource. We encourage ranchers to look on our website and they can see all of our different advisors who are part of our program. And they'll go out to the ranches and provide this one-on-one advice, which is really powerful because, again, it just gives you that second set of eyes. It can help you design that grazing plan each year and see how it's responding over time. And we really just shape that against what the ranchers' needs are. And the last bit is financial. Just to be blunt, I mean, if you have more, you know, financial resources available to you to build that extra water well, right, and that allows you to, you know, then have water available to divide that pasture better, those are things that can be really powerful, or more fencing or virtual fencing or whatever it might be necessary to really improve your livestock management. That can go a long way for these ranchers. And, you know, you're never going to retire on carbon. I want to be clear about that. I think that carbon is a great additional income stream. It's not like finding some deep oil well reserves in your property and your family's now done because you're going to sell it to wildcatters. This is just an addition to your business that can strengthen it and provide you, what's really important is that it can provide you stable income
because obviously beef prices are volatile. And right now, it's, you know, this year has been really great, and that's fantastic. But we know a few years ago it was a pretty tough time for folks. And so really can provide that additional source of income that could be quite steady as part of your beef program.
That's awesome. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you guys are kind of a one-stop shop for ranchers to get kind of anything and everything they need to not only enter the carbon markets, but also, you know, have access to all these different tools that can bolster their operation. You know, something that I get questions on a lot are, you know, why are the carbon markets so complicated? Because they are seemingly infinitely complicated sometimes, and that can make it really, you know, difficult for farmers and ranchers to navigate. So how are you guys also kind of doing almost just like an educational component with ranchers just to help them understand, like, look, here's all the things we do, but maybe this is where you just get started, dip your toes in the water, because it is, there's, you know, there's a lot here, and you don't want to go ahead and, you know, completely all in right out the gate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do as part of our programming, and before we'll sign anybody up, we go through a whole, you know, guidebook of here's what the program looks like. Not only just here's financially what it will look like for you, but, you know, understanding what you're participating in, understanding why you're getting paid is important. And really, we can open it up from there depending on how hungry the rancher is. If they want to sit with the PhD on our team to go through the biogeochemical modeling, you know, some ranchers ask us very, very deep questions about the soil sampling. The last, what tests we're running, are we doing bulk density? What frequency of soil samples are you taking? You're going to 45 centimeters or a meter deep, and why? You know, we get some ranchers who ask very, very deep questions, and others who are happy to just let that market operate in the background. And so we're really happy to cater and provide that transparency as much as of it is interest to the rancher. Again, the protocols are hundreds of pages, and a lot of it is just really specific nuance and guidance on the data that you have to collect and how you have to format it and when you have to submit it and to whom. A lot of it is really just instructional. It's not even so much that it's complex. It's just more almost, you know, bureaucratic at that point, I would say. But again, that's really our job to remove that for folks. It's like paying taxes. Like, you know, again, often people will have an accountant do it for them. It's not impossible to read through the tax code. None of it's, no single sentence there is unbelievable. You don't have to do lots of fancy math. But it's just tedious, right? And so again, by providing that role and removing them from that, it can really support the ranchers. But we do want them to really understand why they're sequestering carbon and how much and what they could do to improve that, because that's really how they get paid.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong that the bureaucratic details are tricky of a carbon program. I mean, shoot, I went to submit 4 passports this past week and I had an error on each application, and I pride myself on my attention to detail. So even just doing simple tasks like that can be, you know, tricky when you're dealing with the government. So I think having, sure, you know, someone ranchers can trust to kind of help them and guide them in making those decisions is really invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely. And carbon's an invisible thing at the end of the day, right? And so obviously we can rely on these soil samples, but it's not like gold where you can put it in a bag and weigh it. There's different aspects that are more complex. And well, how do you do that for trees or no-till crops or you're planting mangroves, right? There's so many different ways you can capture carbon, and to understand how all these rules come together so that they can be treated equal, so that someone like Microsoft or Shell or Volkswagen can buy a credit and say that credit is 1 ton of carbon or CO2 equivalent. What does that mean when they make that statement? And so it's, you need these big rule books so that everybody can be aligned and feel confident in the quality of what you're stating.
Definitely. I mean, you know, something you kind of touched on there, I feel like there's a lot of misconceptions about carbon markets and these programs out there. Like, you know, are there any like big misconceptions that you know, are kind of linger on your mind or that you'd kind of like to dispel here? Because I think that's something that we talk about at Earth Optics all the time is, you know, it can seem like a very hopeful place, and it's not always, you know, as hopeful as it seems. So what are you kind of seeing out there related to that?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's kind of two pieces we like to focus on. I think that, you know, a lot of ranchers go, oh, it's the Wild West. And I think, yes, there's still areas that are being determined. But, you know, to be honest, I think that the beef markets have more swings and more rule changes than carbon does. I think that's just when you're in that industry and you understand it very well, it doesn't seem so hectic. But for us, I think that the carbon markets are way more stable in that set of rules than you think. They make changes and they make updates. Absolutely. But those are really technical and small updates to how do you take this measurement? How many do you have to take? It's a statistical calculation. I mean, those are changes, yes. But to understand like a ton of carbon is equal to a ton of carbon, that rule has been in place for one to two decades. I mean, the Kyoto Protocol was in 1997 and set that establishment. And there's been rules and updates, you know, since then. But this isn't just some wild thing. The market last year was $400 million in voluntary carbon credits purchased in the nature-based solution space. That's a reasonably sized market. It's not, it's going to be much, much bigger in the future. But again, I would say that it's at a maturity point where it's not quite the Wild West anymore. There are very serious rules. All the credits are tracked. If companies mess that up, they will get flamed for it. And we have seen that. Some companies have bought junk credits and they do get unboasted for it. So again, I do want to dispel that myth. And again, maybe there are some programs that are Wild West, but that's true of any industry. There's lots of people who are faking lots of different things in any industry, even gold or oil or cattle or anything else, right? So, I think that that's important to dispel. And then I think the other thing is just understanding like what we're measuring and how certain that is very clear. I think people underestimate how much we spend and how many hours and how much work goes into taking those soil samples and the certainty that that can give us in the work that we do. Again, we spend, I think, $1 million on soil samples last year. We are very certain about the amount of carbon we're capturing, and we can be statistically certain within a range. It might be a 5% or 10% margin of error, but we can give confidence in those. Again, probably higher than you can say that the quality of your cut of meat is when it goes to a processing facility, right? And so, again, I think that there's some myths about that this is all kind of a guess, but it's much more certain than people realize.
Definitely. You know, another, I think, you know, myth or misconception I see a lot is, you know, you have to be like a 100,000 acre ranch to be successful in a carbon program. Is there, you know, with Kateri, is there any minimum size requirements, that you have to meet to work with you? Because granted, Piper and I know this all too, you know, intimately, there are certainly economies of scale when it comes to these programs, you know, like a 20 acre ranch, not going to fare as well as a, you know, 2,000 acre ranch, which isn't going to fare as well as a 20,000 acre ranch. So what does that kind of look like with you guys?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, just to be blunt, there are fixed costs. There's variable costs and there's fixed costs as part of our program. We ultimately have to set out a team to do soil sampling, right? That includes the travel, that includes bringing out the equipment, that includes the lab's time. Whether we analyze one core or 100 cores, we still have to spin that all up, right? And there's, you know, if we want to do virtual fencing or GPS tracking, we have the towers and some of the infrastructure for that. We have, our team has to submit a 200-page report, whether your property is 20 acres or 20,000 acres. It's the same report regardless. Right. And so from our standpoint, there are a certain amount of fixed costs, and we don't want to run a program in which a rancher can't make money. If they're not, the way that our program works is we cover all the costs and then the rancher receives 70% of the profit. So the rancher never has any money out of pocket, and then they get 70% of the profit. We get 30%. That's how we make a living. If they're not making money, we're not making money. It doesn't make sense to run a program where they're going to be negative. You'll never owe us money. You'll just be get zero payments, and then we're just going to be eating a lot of costs. And so again, there are different minimums. What it changes, the reason we don't get a set acreage is because some places, for example, have extremely high rainfall. They can capture so much carbon per acre that you could feasibly go to a smaller property. I would say in general, what our average customer looks like is a 10,000 acre cow-calf. Our smallest property today is about 3,500. Our biggest is 160,000 acres. We work with everything in between. We work on private and public lands. So there is a mix of all those different things. We work on everywhere from, you know, 11 inches of rain in sage grass mix in New Mexico to 45 inches of rain in eastern Oklahoma. You know, there's a wide range, but I would say in general, our minimum is around 3,000 to 4,000 acres. There may be really special circumstances in which we might go below that, but that tends to be, I mean, again, our average tends to be more than that 8,000 to 12,000 is a pretty sweet spot, you know, kind of classic cow-calf in Texas or eastern Colorado, eastern Oregon. Those are a lot of hot spots that we have places, Montana, obviously South Dakota. So.
I think from a, you know, just soil sampling expense perspective, that's about the sweet spot of like where you break the fixed costs and, you know, kind of get, you know, just to send a whole crew out for 100 acres or 3,000 acres tends to be like really similar cost profile. So that kind of tracks as a.
Yeah. And again, we just don't want to waste people's time. You know, this program is not free money. It's not you just sign up and then you get paid. You know, there's real work behind this to improving your soils. And I don't want to make you, you know, I don't want you to sign up to do that work if you're not going to make any money. You know, and so we will run before we sign up a ranch, we provide a financial pro forma. And, you know, I can get a really good idea just based on where you are, what size the property is, you know, your head of cattle and a few other variables. We can get a pretty good sense of what your payments will look like, you know, within a ballpark and, you know, pretty accurately, pretty quickly. And so again, if you're not going to make any money or you're going to make $1 per acre per year, it's like, you know, I don't want to put you through this program. Right. And so, and that doesn't mean there won't be more programs for them in the future. And we can talk about what that might look like. We are working on a number of other avenues that could help these smaller ranches be in some programs, whether that's in setting where you're selling to the beef supply chain. Instead of selling to someone like Microsoft or Shell or Volkswagen, you could be selling to Cargill. And then it's more part of your actual beef supply. And, you know, there's other avenues by which this could make sense, and the requirements for those may be different, where it will be less intensive on soil sampling, for example. So those are all things we're looking at in the future, and we hope to make this available for everybody in the long run.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you're particularly excited about, or maybe not excited about for the future of kind of carbon markets and regenerative planting?
Yeah, for sure. I think that we've entered a really nice space where a lot of early programs and things have started to get weeded out, a lot of the mistakes. And the phrase we use at Katira, we use two phrases that I like to say a lot. First is that the second mouse gets the cheese. So a lot of carbon markets, a lot of people just had to figure a lot of things out. The prices weren't there yet. The demand wasn't there, or XYZ. We're now at a place where, you know, even Katira, we have, you know, multiple contracts with Fortune 500 companies that allow us to do that offtake, that allows us to give certainty to the rancher and pay for their programs, right? So we can pay for the soil sampling, we can pay for the ranch advisory, we can pay for virtual fencing. And so the market's in a nice place for that, but it's going to grow significantly. The stat I always give is that the Fortune 500 companies emit 15 billion tons of carbon per year, and they've made public statements, public commitments to reduce about 4 to 4.5 billion tons by 2030. Some of them may walk by those commitments, but we're likely to see at least 4 billion tons in reductions. Last year, the market was 400 million for voluntary carbon markets and nature-based solutions. So the market should be about 10 times the size by 2030, and I don't think the availability of quality supply will be 10 times the size. So we should see upward price lifting. I think we're just getting higher certainty in the way that soil sampling works, improvements in that technology. Maybe over the future, as we get more and more samples, we need less to take less to be as statistically certain, right? We can use a combination of satellites plus soil samples and still have certainty. There's so many other areas where we'll see these improvements, and we're just getting more and more data, more and more certainty. My hope in the future is that this could be almost even self-guided, where there's more things that the rancher can do on their own. And, you know, you fill in your data, you get it auto-schedules soil samples, it sends out the virtual fencing to you, you know, you get a program, and that way you can really make it accessible for all ranchers, that there's less fixed costs, and it makes it accessible even for the small ranches. I'm excited about that potential for the future. And again, just seeing that demand uplift over time will be great. And the other phrase we use is that when the tide goes out, you see who's not wearing their swim trunks. I think that the carbon markets, just like beef markets, go through ups and downs. And when those down markets happen, you tend to wash out the companies that don't have real programs. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that today. And the same thing happened in forestry. If you Google carbon credits, you're going to find a bunch of articles about forestry programs in Africa and South America that were just cheating. They just weren't doing real work, and they got blown out of the water. I mean, they survived for 4 or 5 years, and then they got embarrassed, and the schemes came falling down. And I think we'll see that across a number of carbon markets. And again, that just happens. And again, that happens in lots of industries. I mean, you can Google ghost cattle, you'll find the same thing in the beef markets. And so I think that, again, we're excited to see that change, or that cycle really just continue to improve the quality of the markets.
You talked about, you know, improvements in soil sampling technology, improvements in, you know, just overall that make this potentially more accessible for farmers. What technology are you like most excited about, you know, coming up? Is there anything that's really a big highlight that you think will be a big benefit for ranchers in the coming years?
Yeah, I think there's really a combination of technologies. I think that there will be no singular technology that will win out. I think that, to be blunt, like, soil sampling is the brute force way to do it. It's just, look, we just go take all the samples, and that's just the most verifiable way we can do it. It's just expensive, right? And so I think that there's either, I see the developments in three or four phases. One, improvement in satellite imagery combined with soil samples, as well as in field. So we partner with Enriched Ag, for example, who I know you guys work with as well. Enriched Ag has these in-field camera systems. If we take thousands, I mean, really millions of photos across all these properties, we can start to see trends and understand how above ground forage is impacting soil samples. That combined with, again, improved satellite, both in the granularity and frequency of satellite images. We're also experimenting with things called flux towers that could complement soil sampling. These are things that they're basically little towers. They're like 30 feet tall, and they measure the air 10 times per second with a little spinning monitor. And that can measure the gaseous carbon coming in and out. Will that ever be a solo solution? No, it's not going to be sufficient for scale because it can't measure all 10,000 acres. You could try doing extrapolations of things. It'll always be calibrated against real ground samples. But again, all these different things in combination could create a kit where it's more cost effective, or it can give us more frequent observations. Because that's the one thing, because soil sampling is expensive, we can only do it every 3 to 5 years. Right. And so what's happened with the soil between then? What if you just happen to have a drought in that fifth year? You know, did you wipe away all the work you just did, or was it never really there? By having these systems where we can use cameras in the field, or we can use flux towers, it can start to build the picture in between. Even if they can never be an absolute, we may never be able to issue carbon credits based on those images, but we can at least start to understand what's happening in between. And I think that will be really important to driving true change in the rangeland management.
There's like a nice parallel there to the virtual fencing, right? It's the in between. It's the checking on the cattle, you know, where you used to see them from point to point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and something, you know, I think about it, and Ben, I forget if we talked about this when I was with you in Minneapolis a month or so ago, but you know, the soil sampling that, you know, you guys do and we do is very intensive, and it's, you know, not something you want to do every week because it's super costly. And you know, the way I like to think about it sometimes is that's kind of like going to the doctor, you know, on an annual basis or every couple of years and getting blood work done. And, you know, it's a super high resolution, you know, data set that relates to your health. You got to do something, you know, and other 364 days in that year. So, you know, like I wear an Apple Watch and that tells me what, you know, my heart rate is throughout the day and how well my sleep was. And so, you know, I like how you touched on, you know, all these other complementary services like the flux towers, which I'm, you know, particularly excited about, that they give you the insights, you know, throughout the year, or, you know, interim years between these really intensive soil sampling campaigns, because there's a lot of money, you know, at stake with these projects. And it's really important that everything's done so that they go as successfully as possible, because there's obviously the financial gains for everybody, but, you know, underlying that all is the legitimate soil health of these ranches. And so, you know, the success of these projects is not just a, you know, a great opportunity financially, but, you know, it's just so important for water quality, air quality, you know, native bird populations, for instance. And so, Don, I'm really, really glad that you touched on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And again, I think that's a great metaphor with Apple Watch. And for us, a big focus is on giving ranchers tools and using technology that is in the background and constantly gathering that data. You know, I don't want to give additional burdens. The ranchers are already doing enough. If I have to then have them go out and take photo points and then go write in a journal and some other stuff, half the ranchers aren't going to do it. It's going to be a burden to the ones who are. Some of them are going to take photos of the wrong thing, or we're going to get, you know, I've looked at hundreds of ranchers' Maya grazing and AgriWeb logins. And, you know, again, it's great tools. It can be, it's better than them doing it on paper, you know, what we call the rancher Excel sheet. You know, it can be more consistent than that, but I've looked at dozens of ranchers' Maya grazing and AgriWebs and such. It's just really inconsistent. You get, you know, one ranch who I know manages just two herds, but in his Maya grazing, he has 50 herds with different titles. One of them is called sick cows. Sick cows just disappears at some point. I don't know if those cows got healthier. I don't know if they died. I don't know if they were sold. You know, you get things where you just don't really understand what's happening, and it's self-drawn in where your pastures are instead of you. You know, it's all these different aspects that are just hard to build scientific certainty of and hard to provide feedback on. Whereas if you have virtual fencing collars on, it is continuous. It's every single hour. It's extremely accurate because it's a GPS, right? It doesn't rely on human remembering to write it down. It doesn't require a human accuracy of reading where the cow's location is. All these things are just happening automatically in the background. And that's how we get really large data sets. And that's how we can provide real insight to the rancher, taking hundreds of soil samples, having a flux tower that's just reading the air constantly, having enriched ag cameras that are just taking thousands of photos every time you drive around your property, right? You don't have to go out there and take a photo point. It's in the background. And that level of autonomousness and degree of accuracy and frequency of the data is something that we think will, again, really unlock a next level for ranchers.
Ben, this is a totally random question, but I was thinking of it as you're walking through kind of all these passive data collection tools. But when you have the virtual fencing, if you were to like remove those virtual fence lines, can you tell from like the animal movement where the fence lines are?
Yeah,
in a particular area?
Yeah, we have a rancher up in South Dakota, and he had basically, there was a pretty big like windstorm and kind of hailstorm, and all the cows were gathered up, but they were still responding to the virtual fencing line. So they ended up just digging up their hooves, and it looked like, you know, when you go near a water trough, you see the grass completely pulled out. It's all just hoof prints, and it looked like that in the middle of a field. You could see a perfect line of where the cows were pressing up against, even though there was no line there. And so seeing like things like that can be really impressive when you see the technology work. And there's limitations in technology, and I think that's important. The companies are now there's a lot more competitiveness because Halter and Gallagher have both entered the United States with virtual fencing products. Mm-hmm. And so we're really excited to see how they go. And I mean, it's a lot better than when I left 2-3 years ago, but I think that there's still work to do, but it's really impressive what it can do, especially on properties that big public lands, for example, that can't fence those lands, both because of requirement, because of state requirements or BLM requirements, whatever it might be. I think it really is just going to unlock how they can manage those animals.
That's amazing. Can you share with us, any particular success stories or standout stories that you have, in your history at Kateri?
Yeah, for sure. I always think about one of our ranchers. He's in New Mexico. He has had to work two jobs because, the livestock just wasn't going to be sufficient for him to raise and to feed his family. But it was something that he was really dedicated to and owning land was his American dream and being able to put that together was really powerful for him. But the carbon, what we did, we have kind of a multi-stage thing with this property where we actually helped him apply to a grant and win some funding for additional material. So we do have a grant writer on staff and support ranchers with that, as well as the carbon payments. So it was a really cool combination where we got to flex all of our muscles. He's using virtual fencing now, which also allows him, he's kind of by himself, so he doesn't have a ranch hand. He really runs his own property. He was able to manage a much larger herd than he historically was. And he's not working the second job now, so he can really focus on the rangeland management on his property. And seeing those things in concert was also one of our first properties where we got approval from a state land board. And so, again, seeing that on public lands was really exciting because a portion of the money goes back to the public schools in New Mexico. So, again, just a real combination of seeing all these different avenues come together and seeing him be able to really focus and improve his lands has been a really powerful win for us.
That's awesome. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more success stories too next time we talk to you here.
Absolutely.
And, we know you're a busy guy, so we're going to make sure to wrap this up in the next, 5-10 minutes or so. And a really, really important question that I meant to ask first, completely neglected to, is what does Kateri mean? Because, at Earth Optics, I feel like we've gotten into a few arguments over even how to pronounce it.
Let's figure that up first. It's Kateri?
Yeah, it's Kateri. Yeah, Kateri. Okay.
Because I already said it wrong. So Kateri, got it.
Yeah. We get every pronunciation. We get a lot of Kateri. We have one rancher who sends us emails and it just says K-A-T-O-R, Kater, which is my favorite, not even close to spelling of our company, but it's a memorable name, which is great. So Kateri she's the patron saint of regenerative agriculture. So she's the only Native American woman who was canonized by the Pope. So she's Saint Kateri. So she was from the Mohawk tribe out east. And again, she became a symbol of obviously a lot of the lessons and learnings that we've had from Native Americans on how to treat the land. And I just love that symbol of, we think that regenerative agriculture is really powerful. Obviously that word means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but I think we can agree on the sentiment that we're really striving for and to really take from that is something that's really powerful for us. So.
That's amazing. And I'm glad we cleared up the pronunciation. Gunnar and I can both relate with names that are often mispronounced, and Piper's usually not mispronounced, but always misspelled.
Ben, first of all, where can people get connected with you folks? And then second of all, the other question is there anything that we didn't bring up or mention today that you'd like to discuss about Kateri?
I'll go to the first question. You can always reach out to me, Ben, at katericarbon.com, or you can just go to our website, katericarbon.com. I think if you try to spell it in any form, it's K-A-T-E-R-I, but I think if you just sound it out and put it in there, you'll get to our webpage. Again, it's a pretty unique name address. So, again, I think it's pretty hard to miss it. And we have a number of resources on our website. We've got a blog with tons of different articles talking about different, just deep diving on some of the topics we talked today, like technology. We go through all the different resources that our team has. You can see who our ranch advisors are. You can see who our team members are. So you can find who's in your region. We got sales staff in Montana and Colorado and Texas and all these other pieces. So, you can definitely find someone who understands your domain the best. And we're always happy to come out to your ranch. We don't sign anybody to our program if we've not been to your property in person. And that's something that's real important to us, to just, meet you and your family. This is, it's a long-term contract. It's a long-term, it's a serious thing to sign up for. And so we want to make sure that it's something that, we're really all bought in. And this is going to be for most ranches, it's a multi-million dollar opportunity. So to really connect with that, it's not something we're just going to do over the phone. It's something we're really going to want to understand you and your operations. And we think that's important, as well as our advisors coming out, the soil sampling team comes out.
Well, thank you for that, Ben. This has been a really, really fun conversation. Piper, is there anything else that we missed, you know, from asking Ben? I feel like we covered a lot today.
No, Ben, it was an honor to have you on here. We're excited about the program that Kateria is offering to, you know, ranchers in the U.S. and excited to see how it grows and changes over time. Folks, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Grounded. Remember to like, subscribe, and share. Did I miss anything?
Leave a good review. Share it again.
There you go. That's a wrap.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Ben. That was really fun.
Awesome. Appreciate the time today, guys.